All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday, October 26th. We're doing Chem3L, and we were discussing here a little bit about whether we wanted to do gas laws or whether we wanted to do balancing chemical equations. And it seems like both Cisco and Lucas are moving on to balancing chemical equations, but we didn't quite finish gas laws. We were still in the middle of gas laws last time. And I do have an experiment for gas laws that that gives you a little bit better understanding of the connections between molar mass and gas laws. And it's actually one of my favorite experiments, which is why I'm actually kind of excited that people wanted to go ahead and do a little bit more gas laws work. So so without further ado, let me go ahead and start a screen share. That means I actually got to plug this thing in so it'll work. Okay, and before I bring in the experiment, let's maybe take a minute just to remember what our gas laws are and the different gas laws that we have. So our gas law equations, we have the ideal gas law. And this is PV equals NRT. And we can say where R is equal to 0.082058 is the value that Lucas has been using, and I'm sure that's the similar value that Cisco has been using, and that is liters, atmospheres over moles, Kelvin. And sometimes we'll see to three sig figs, 0.0821, that depending upon who's doing the problems or what textbook you're using and whether they're using the gas constant, the ideal gas law constant to, or the universal gas constant to three sig figs or to five sig figs. That's the difference there. Okay, and then besides the ideal gas law, we have what's called the combined gas law. This is used for changing conditions. P1 V1 over N1 T1 is equal to P2 V2 over N2 T2. And the only restriction here is that T must be in Kelvin. So the temperatures have to be converted to Kelvin. Otherwise, the pressures, the volumes, those can be in any units because they cancel out in the combined gas law because it works on ratios, but T always has to be in Kelvin. So, so that's a restriction on the combined gas law. The PV equals NRT, the ideal gas law versus the combined gas law. The ideal gas law is used to calculate one variable. Given the other three. The combined gas law is used for changing conditions. Conditions that do not change can be dropped from the equation. We could say you're held constant. Can be dropped. And when we drop those, that gives rise to these different laws that are Boyle's law. Charles's law. Avogadro's law. And so all those different laws come out of the combined gas law when other conditions are held constant. And I never remember, I never memorized Boyle's law, Charles' law, Avogadro's law. I just always derive whatever it is I need. And so I don't even worry about which one is which. I just look at the problem and whatever conditions are held constant, I drop them out of the equation. And the representative equation, Boyle's law, Charles' law, or Avogadro's law, just sort of drops out of the combined gas law. So there's our combined gas law component. And then the only other thing that we have in this that is a distinct equation is Dalton's law of partial pressures. And Dalton's law of partial pressure has a number of ways that it can be used. Essentially what it says is that the pressure total in a system is equal to the partial pressures of gas one plus gas two plus gas three, however many gases there are, plus gas n, that the pressure total is the sum of all the individual pressures. And that Dalton's law of partial pressures, as easily stated as it is, has slightly larger ramifications that most people don't derive. If we take this and we say that the pressure total is equal to each one of these individual pressures, and they're all in the same container, and they're all at the same temperature, and they're all in the same volume, then what we could say is this becomes N1 times RT over V plus N2 times RT over V plus N3 times RT over V, because R is the universal gas constant, it's always the same. And if these are in the same container, then they're all at the same temperature. And if they're all in the same container, they're all in the same volume. So there is no R1 or T1 or V1. There is just R, T, and V. And so then we get out to N, however many gases there are, times RT over V. And if you look at that and realize that R, T, and V, if we do it this way, we say R, T, and V are all the same, then what we can do is we can factor them out. And as we factor them out, what we get is the pressure total is equal to N1 plus N2 plus N3 plus however many gases there are. And that gets multiplied by RT over V as RT and V is factored out. This is the expression of Dalton's law of partial pressure that I like. And usually what I do is I carry this line out so that the line goes all the way across and that those ends are in the numerator with R and T and V is in the denominator. This is a more useful derivative of Dalton's law of partial pressures. And what it says really is it says that the gases here, that this is just the sum of all moles of gas. And that because when we developed PV equals NRT, it was independent of the size of the gas. The size of the gas didn't matter. And because the size of the gas didn't matter, the mass of the individual particles didn't matter. It was really just the number of particles that was important. And so all gases are treated as if they are equal. And the sum of the moles then tells us the total number of moles. And that times RT over V gives us the total pressure. So the two expressions for Dalton's law of partial pressure is the sum of the partial pressures, or the expression where it is the sum of the moles times RT over V. So it really is just PV equals NRT, understanding that this is number of moles total. And when you understand that's number of moles total, it extends out that way. So that's Dalton's law of partial pressure. Beyond that, these are the three equations that we have for all of the gas laws. Beyond this, there are several questions that I saw that Lucas was asking, I'm sure Cisco was asking some too, that utilize the density of a gas or utilize the molar mass of a gas. And it is frequent that, particularly at the Chem 1A level, we don't often see it at the Chem 3 level, but some questions combine PV equals NRT with molar mass, which equals grams per mole, or with density, which in this case equals grams per liter. So within PV equals NRT, what we see when we combine things with molar mass like this is that N and moles, that we can combine these two equations where N is moles. And so we can substitute in molar mass into this equation. We could solve it for moles, and then we can put it back into PV equals NRT. The same thing that we can do that when we use density, we can see liters, volume, and we could solve the density equation for liters and plug it back into PV equals NRT and come up with an equation then that utilizes the density of a gas or utilizes the molar mass of a gas. And so, for instance, molar mass, if we solve this equation and we say molar mass is equal to grams per mole, and we solve it, let's do it not as a ratio, but let's do it as a fraction, right? And if I want to solve this equation for moles, then what I do is I multiply both sides of the equation by moles, moving it from the left-hand side to the right-hand side. I get moles times molar mass equals grams. And then if I want to isolate moles by itself, now what I do is I divide both sides by molar mass. And what I get is that moles, oh, these guys cancel out now. What I get is moles equals grams divided by molar mass. Or I could say N is equal to grams divided by molar mass, because N is moles. And now I can substitute into PV equals NRT. And so what I get is I get PV equals grams over molar mass. Put that into parentheses, times RT, or PV equals GRT, grams times the gas constant times the temperature over molar mass. And that means then that I could solve for any one of these variables, including molar mass, or if molar mass is given to me, and the mass of the gas is given to me, then I could solve for one of the other variables. But usually what they'll do is usually they'll solve the equation and they'll say molar mass is then equal to GRT over PV, which is a nice use of the gas laws. All right, we could do the same thing with density. So if we take the density equation and we solve the density for the volume, watch what we can do here. So with density, we get density. Let's use the word actually in here. Density equals grams over liters is the way that it's usually written. We'll solve it for L, multiply both sides by L, come out with the expression that L times the density is equal to mass. Move density to the other side. These two cancel. Oh, I canceled liters there. And so I get liters is equal to grams over density. Or I could say that volume is equal to grams over density, as long as the density is in grams per liter. And then once I have that, I can substitute in. Substituting in for V, I get pressure times grams over density is equal to nRT. And then oftentimes what people will do will solve this for the density and then be able to use all the gas variables to figure out what the density of the gas actually is. So if we wanted to solve this for density, the first thing to do is to clean it up a little bit. Pressure times the grams mass over density is equal to nRT. Move density to the other side of the equation to get it into the numerator. So multiply both sides by density. The density cancels, getting it out of the denominator into the numerator. We get the pressure times the mass in grams is equal to nRT times density. And then move nRT over to the other side. So what we get is we get the density is equal to the pressure times the mass in grams over the number of moles times the gas constant times the temperature. And then given the mass and these other factors, we could actually solve for the density of a gas, or we could use that density in equations. And so it is these equations here that are the most useful representations, as is the molar mass of a gas and this expression here before we solved it. These are very helpful equations, not that you need to memorize, but that making this connection that the number of moles is moles over here in molar mass, and that the volume is liters within density. And that allows you then to use molar mass or density within PV equals nRT problems. And that's the connection between those problems in combining those two equations. Now, a lot of times people won't combine them. A lot of times people find that combining them like this, they don't even bother. What they do is they do PV equals nRT and they solve it for grams. And then they take and they plug grams into either the molar mass or the density equation. But I like combining them and seeing that connection with them and being able to derive that and combine them and then just throw it all into one equation, because you can make less mistakes then you only have one equation to calculate and there's no rounding. And it's a lot more straightforward, I think, in many of those types of problems. So that would be the helpful hint that I would have, in that those are the additional types of problems that we see where we get PD equals NRT with molar mass and with density. Okay, so with all of that, what I typically like to do at this point is to introduce an experiment. And for this experiment, we need some equipment. So I'm going to bring in my equipment and we're going to do an experiment called molar mass of a gas. And what I'll do as well is I will bring in, I don't think I did it yet, I did not, I will bring in molar mass of the gas write-up. And I got one page extra in here I gotta get rid of. There we go. So this is the molar mass of the gas write-up, the experiment. And it's actually a fairly lengthy write-up. It has an introduction, it has the materials that we need, the experimental setup. It's got directions on how we go through and actually do this. There's a vapor pressure of water table that's in here. There's questions for analysis at the end. And the data keeping, I'm going to have to help you with that. So we're going to go through and I'm going to introduce some new pages after the write-up that's going to take and use all of these different components and show how we can put these components together in order to do an experiment where we find the molar mass of the gas. So the goal here, the goal is to experimentally determine the molar mass of an unknown gas. That's what our goal is. And interestingly, when you think about this experiment, we've never done anything like this. Or even in class, we've never really talked about an experiment like this. Usually when we want to find the molar mass of something, we have its formula and we go, we look it up on the periodic table and we calculate the molar mass based on the values in the periodic table, knowing what elements go into that gas. But in reality, because of the gas laws and the way the gas laws work, and based on what I was just showing you moments ago, that based on the derivation of molar mass and using PV equals NRT, if I can measure the mass of a gas, the temperature of the gas, the pressure of the gas, and the volume of the gas, using the gas constant R, I can then actually calculate the molar mass. And these are all things that are easily measurable. Mass is easily measurable. Temperature with a thermometer, pressure with a barometer. I can measure the atmospheric pressure and the volume, whatever I put the gas into, I can measure the volume of the gas. These are all things that can be measured easily within the classroom. And we can actually determine what the molar mass of a gas is just with these basic physical properties of the gas. That's an astounding achievement, if you think about it, because you're actually measuring what one mole of gas weighs, the molar mass of that material. And there's no other experiment like it that you could do that. So this is actually really quite cool. Okay, so the different equipment that we need. We need a fairly large Erlenmeyer flask, a beaker, an unknown gas. We need a pan balance to be able to measure masses with. We'll need a ring stand and a ring in order to hold this whole thing together. We've got a thermometer that comes into it. We use this rubber tubing to be able to move the gas from place to place, dispense it where we want. A scoopula, which is just a pokey tool, and a rubber stopper. All of this equipment is all we need. Oh, and a graduated cylinder. My graduated cylinder is not on here. I'll have to add that in a little bit later. But all this equipment is what I need in order to measure the molar mass of the gas. So here's what we're going to do. We have an equation. Our equation states, and we derived it earlier, so I'm not going to go through the whole derivation again. The equation states that molar mass is equal to, let's go grab it. Let's not make a mistake here. That would be uncool. Molar mass is equal to grams times RT over PV. Grams times RT over PV. And so that means that we're going to have to measure the mass of the gas. We'll need the temperature. We'll need the pressure. And we'll need the volume. And we'll use the value of R, that R equals 0.082058 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. And that's going to determine all the values or the units for each of the values that we're going to need. The mass of the gas is going to be in grams. The temperature is going to have to be in Kelvin. The pressure will need to be in atmospheres. And the volume will have to be in liters so that all the units work out appropriately. And if we do just a quick unit analysis, that's going to equal grams times liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. That's going to be times Kelvin. And all of that is over atmospheres times liters. And we look to see how those units cancel. Excuse me. So as they cancel, Kelvin cancels out. Atmospheres and liters cancel out. The units that are left are grams and moles, but the way that those grams and moles work out is that it is grams over moles, and that equals grams per mole, and that is molar mass. So the units, if we do all of these units appropriately, we will come out with grams per mole, and we will get molar mass in this experiment as we go through and do this. Okay, so let me, here we go. This other piece that I wanted here. Okay, so let's talk about how we're gonna do this experiment a little bit. And let me grab some of these images. And I think I can do it this way. Okay, let's take the ring stand. I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna copy all of this one more time and take it down with me so I don't have to come back for everything every time I need to come back for something. Let's see how this is going to work out. We may have to change sizes on some of these things as we're doing it. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to take that ring stand. And set it up so that we can put the ring on it. So all I need to do is move it. And we'll take that ring and we'll put that guy on it. Maybe someplace like that. And the Erlenmeyer flask, what we're going to do is we're going to take this rubber stopper and we're going to fill up the flask with water. And when we fill the flask with water, we fill it all the way to its top and we actually make a little bit of extra water at the top so it bulges out a little bit. And as we fill this up with water, we make sure that there's no air bubbles inside it. Once we're sure that there's no air bubbles inside it, then what we do is we take this stopper and we put the stopper on it so that no air bubbles get inside it. And then what we do is we take and we invert this. And after inverting it, we take and we set it in this ring. And it kind of sits in the ring like that. And then what we do is we take the beaker and we put the beaker underneath it so that it sits inside the beaker a little bit. And we're gonna have to shrink the beaker down a bit too. So it looks kind of like this. And then what we do is we also fill the beaker, not quite full of water, but we put water in the beaker up to about the middle of the neck of the Erlenmeyer flask. And then what we do is we use this scupula thing, this guy. And we take it and we poke at that rubber stopper and we kind of work it from both sides. We work it from the right-hand side, we work it from the left-hand side, and we knock that stopper out so that the stopper falls out of this thing. Let me see if I can get the whole stopper. Mostly. And as that stopper falls out, it just falls into the bottom of the flask here. And it sits there and we don't need to worry about it anymore. It served its purpose. Its purpose was really just to allow us to be able to get the flask inverted and to have the water, it's too much water, have the water sitting inside here. And it keeps all the rest of that water inside this Erlenmeyer flask. Okay, so now we have the whole setup. And the idea is that we are going to try to capture the gas by displacement. So what we are going to do is we are going to take and we're going to insert gas into this flask. The gas is going to push out the water. And as the gas pushes out the water out of this flask, we are going to get both its volume of the gas, we'll get its temperature, and we'll actually be able to get its pressure as well. So we're going to get all these different parts of this experiment just from this simple setup. Okay, so before we start, what we need to do is we need to actually get the mass of the gas. And so to get the mass of the gas, we have this gas can, and we could take and we could put gas into this thing over here, and then we could try to measure the mass of the gas that goes into it. But that's actually rather hard to do. it's much easier to be able to get the mass of the gas by difference. And so what we do is before we start, we take the gas can and we weigh the gas can. We put it on the balance and we get the mass of whatever that gas can is. So let's say, and let's make a list of the things that we're doing here. So we set up this whole apparatus. Number one, we fill the Erlenmeyer flask. With water. Number two, we stopper the flask. Number three, we fill or place approximately 700 milliliters of water into the beaker. Number four, we invert Erlenmeyer flask. Into beaker. And remove stopper. Okay, number five, we weigh the gas tank. And the gas tank, let's say the gas tank weighs 826.20 grams. And then what we do is number six, we use the U-tube to dispense gas. Into the Erlenmeyer flask. So that U-tube, basically what we do is we take the gas can. Where are you, gas can? Come on over here. And we take that little U-tube and we run the U-tube up into the Erlenmeyer flask. And then this has a rubber tubing that comes over here. That's the wrong side. And that rubber tubing fits just over this gas can valve. And then we push on this, and as we push on it, what winds up happening is gas winds up going in and filling this thing and displacing the water. So as we fill it, the water starts leaving this thing. I'm gonna ignore my ring stand for a moment. And we fill it up with gas. Actually, there might be an easier way to do this. Let's just say that what I do is I fill it up with gas all the way until the water is right about there. So that water is still in the tank. In the Erlenmeyer flask. And then I stop. And I stop dispensing gas and I reweigh the gas tank. So after reweighing the gas tank, after dispensing gas. And let's say that that gas tank now weighs 825.60 grams. So that we have the new mass of the gas tank. And the gas tank is lighter because it's lost mass, because that mass is now all inside of here. So this gas, the gas that is sitting inside this Erlenmeyer flask, is the difference between the two weighings. So this is going to be 826.20 grams, subtract 825.60 grams. And I'm coming out here at 0.60 grams. I think so. So I'm at 0.60 grams used. All right, so we've measured the mass and we have the mass of the gas. In terms of our equation, molar mass equals grams times RT over PV. We now have grams. Next up, we've got to get temperature, pressure, and volume. So let's take a look at what we can do for temperature. So number nine, use thermometer to take temperature of water. So basically what we do is we take the thermometer. I'm just going to go get the thermometer. Where is that thing? And we put it into our flask over here. Sort of right about there. And we get the temperature of the water. Now, why do we take the temperature of the water? Well, because if we look at what's going on at the surface, right now what we have is we have the beaker and the water in the beaker, and we have the Erlenmeyer flask and the neck of the Erlenmeyer flask that comes down straight like this and opens up. And inside of the water here, we have the gas particles. So this is all that, and then there's water inside here. So this appears a little bit darker because of the water that's inside the flask. Okay, and the gas particles that are sitting in here are pinging and bouncing off of the water. And the gas particles, as they ping off the water, trade energy with the water molecules. And so the water molecules, which are sitting in here, which are H2O, are colliding with the gas particles. And as they trade energy through those collisions, eventually the energy is traded and equilibrated such that the gas and the water come to the same temperature. And we may have to wait 5 minutes, we may have to wait 10 minutes, but if we wait long enough, the water will become in equilibrium with the gas. And so the temperature of the water equals the temp of the gas. Does that make sense? That they would be equivalent in that way. So whatever temperature we get for that water, that's the temperature that we're going to get for the gas as well. So let's say that that temperature equals about 21.2 degrees Celsius. So we have our temperature. So now we have molar mass equals grams RT over PV. We've got grams, we've got temperature. Now what we've got to do is we've got to figure out pressure and volume. And it turns out that the pressure and the volume are sort of linked together. And we have to find them together. So let's deal with the volume situation and how it's linked to pressure. So this is, what step are we at? We're on 10. When we look at the Erlenmeyer flask, I'll draw it a little bit bigger. And we look at the beaker. And the flask, let's do it this way. There are three different ways that this can work out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to copy this and paste it over three times. Now, I did make a slight mistake because I should have put the water into the flask. And I should have put the water into the beaker as well. There are three different possible alignments of the flask and the beaker. One possible alignment is that the water inside the Erlenmeyer flask is above the water in the flask. One possible alignment is that the water in the flask is below the water in the beaker. And another possible alignment is that they are exactly equal and that they fall at the same place. So to highlight that, that's where our levels are sitting. So we have the level in the beaker, the level in the flask, both levels together. Levels there. Okay, so this can be achieved by simply moving the Erlenmeyer flask up and down. All I need to do is move the ring stand slightly. And as I move the ring stand slightly, what winds up happening is the water that is inside the flask can be pushed below the level in the beaker, or brought above the level in the beaker, or set equal to the level in the beaker. Well, what's really going on here? What's going on is that when we look at these different levels of water as they sit, there are different pressures occurring. And so what I have outside here pushing down on this, this is the pressure of the atmosphere. And what I have inside the flask is the pressure of the gas. And so in each one of these, I have the pressure of the atmosphere and I have the pressure of the gas. And at different positions, these pressures have different values. when the water that is inside the flask up here is above the water in the beaker, then we say that the pressure of the atmosphere is greater than the pressure of the gas. When the gas is pushing on this and it's pushed below this level, we would say that the pressure of the atmosphere is less than the pressure of the gas. And when they're at the same level, do you know what we say when they're at the same level? We say that they're equal. So here, the pressure of the atmosphere is equal to the pressure of the gas. The volume, when we do this, changes slightly. And so because the volume changes slightly, we want to measure the volume exactly where the pressure of the atmosphere is equal to the pressure of the gas, because this equality allows us to be able to look up what the atmospheric pressure is and then know the pressure of the gas by using the atmospheric pressure. And so this is the ideal place to take the measurement. This is ideally what we want to try to do. So we say this is the goal. Now, there's one more part in this that I haven't explained yet. And that is that there's not just gas inside this flask. There's something else inside the flask. And it has to do with this picture back up here. That when I look at this gas that's floating around, this gas is over on top of water. And water spontaneously evaporates at room temperature, and water has a vapor pressure. So what happens is there's a little bit of water that goes into the gas phase. And I have some gas particles that are water. And so what winds up happening is this is actually an expression of Dalton's law of partial pressures, where it's not just the pressure of the atmosphere and the pressure of the gas, but also the pressure of the water. And inside here is the pressure of the water, which is also pushing down. And each one of these, pressure gas plus pressure water, each one of these has the pressure of the water along with it. And so we're going to have to actually get that pressure of water back out of this in order to use this equation and figure out what the pressure of the gas is. Okay, more on that in a minute. Let's measure the atmospheric pressure. The atmospheric pressure right now is 752.56, at least where I'm sitting. So pressure, atmosphere, as measured on a barometer, equals 752.56 millimeters of mercury. So that's our atmospheric pressure. And we would have had to go and look on the computer, or we would have used a barometer that was in the classroom, and we would have obtained that pressure by looking at that barometer and getting the pressure for today right now as we do that experiment. All right. All that being said, we still need to deal with pressure of the water, and we still need to deal with volume. So what do we do to get the volume? Well, next stop, I said 10 was volume. I should say volume and pressure. Because what we do is we place a mark on the flask right at this point. We use a little Sharpie marker, and we put the Sharpie marker in here, and we put a little mark on the flask. And then we remove the flask. And once we remove the flask, then what we do is we have our flask with our mark on it. And the mark tells us what the volume in the flask was when we were at the atmospheric pressure that was there. We then take that empty flask and we fill it to the mark with water. And we're careful not to exceed that mark and to not go below it. We want it right exactly at that mark, the meniscus we want at that mark. So basically, there's our mark that we're filling it up to. We fill it up so the meniscus sits right on that mark. Then what we do is we take a graduated cylinder. A graduated cylinder is a piece of equipment designed to accurately measure volumes. And we pour the water into the cylinder and we record the volume. I know my volumes don't look equal here, but we're going to have to go with the drawing. And we record what that volume is, and that volume equals 237 milliliters. It would be nice if we could get more than three sig figs, but on a graduated cylinder this big, they only go down to the ones. They don't go down into the tenths. And so that's the best that we can do at that point. Okay, so we've got the pressure of the atmosphere and we've got the volume of the gas. The last thing that we need is the pressure of this water so that we can figure out what the pressure of the gas actually is. So where do we get the pressure of the water? Well, the pressure of the water is based on temperature. And there's a table back here in the experiment, right here. And that table, what we do is we use our temperature and our temperature, let's go back up and look at it. Our temperature was 21.2 degrees C. So at 21.2 degrees C, that was convenient. I went the wrong way. That's vapor pressure. We're going to have to extrapolate. So here's 21 and here's 22 degrees C. And we want temp equals 21.2. Yeah. It's awfully tempting to just go with the 18.6 value, but we can do a little bit better than 18.6. So what we can do is we can find the difference between 19.8 subtract 18.6. So 1.2, and then there are 10 degrees between 21 and 22. And then we multiply that by 2/10 of a degree. So that's 0.24. And then we add that back to our 18.6. So 18.6 plus 0.24, following our sig figs rules, 18.84, and we would just round it out here. So we're at 18.8. And let's look at the units on this. This is in torr, 18.8 torr equals the pressure of the water. All right, so far, this has been like a tour de force of all the different things. So now we know that the pressure of the atmosphere is equal to the pressure of the gas plus the pressure of the water. That's by Dalton's law of partial pressure. We now know the pressure of the atmosphere. We now know the pressure of the water. So by simple rearranging, we can say that the pressure of the gas is equal to the pressure of the atmosphere minus the pressure of the water. And we might as well go ahead and get that pressure of the gas right now. Except for the problem that the pressure of the atmosphere equaled, what was it? We had it. There it is, 752.56 millimeters of mercury. And the pressure of the H2O equals 18.8 torr. So you have to know how to convert millimeters of mercury in torr. The nice thing is that 1 millimeter of mercury equals 1 torr. They're actually equivalent units. And so really, I can just go ahead and subtract these, and following my good Sig Figs rules, oops, come on back. No, not you, you. 752.56 subtract 18.8. 733.76. And because we're at tenths, I'll have to round to the tenths. Now I'm going to hold it and then do all my rounding at the end. But that's going to be, you could say millimeters of mercury, or you could say torr, they're the same unit. That is my pressure of my gas. Okay, so making a list of all the things that I've got now. Pressure of the gas equals 733.76 millimeters of mercury. Good to the tenth place. Temperature equaled 21.2 degrees Celsius. Volume. The volume was 237 milliliters. And the mass, that's the other thing that I need. Let's go back and get that, was 0.60 grams. And my equation was that molar mass equals grams times RT over PV. So it looks like I have mass in grams, temperature, pressure, and volume. I have everything I need to be able to actually solve this for the molar mass, except for they're not in the right units. So I need to do some unit conversion on each one of these to make sure that they're in the right units. We said that pressure needed to be in atmospheres. So we take this guy, and for every 760 millimeters of mercury, I get one atmosphere. Temperature needed to be in Kelvin, plus 273.15. Volume needed to be in liters. So for every 1,000 milliliters, I get 1 liter. And now I can calculate each one of these guys, 733.76 divided by 760. 0.965473684 atmospheres. I'll let that run out. 21.2 plus 273.15, 294.35 Kelvin. And this one is going to be 0.237 liters. Sig figs wise, just tracking where I'm at, I was at 4 sig figs there. I'm going to be at 4 out here. I'm at the tenth position here. I'll be at the tenth position there. That's going to be 4. And this is going to be 3 out of that position. And now I should be able to just plug everything into this and say that my molar mass is equal to 0.60 grams times R of 0.08 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. Multiply that by the temperature of 294.35. And all of that gets divided by the pressure. This is the long one that we've got to write out. 0.965473684 atmospheres. And that gets times 0.237 liters. So all of that goes in the calculator at once. 0.6 times 0.082058 times 294.35 divided by 0.965473684 and divided by 0.237. 63.335533 grams per mole is what that comes out to. And when we do sig figs, it was 2, 5, 4, because we were good to the tenths. This was 4, and this was 3. So 2 sig figs is my smallest. 63 grams per mole. And we were able to measure the molar mass of that gas. So it's really kind of a cool experiment, although it does have a number of factors that we need to take into account. The biggest one being Dalton's law of partial pressure with the water and the water pressure inside this and correcting for the water pressure. And once we correct for the water pressure, then this thing comes out pretty well. And usually what we do is we repeat this experiment 3 times. And then we average out all of the answers after repeating it 3 times. All right, so what I'm going to do with this is this is one trial. We'll use this as trial one. So we have trial one here. I'll put up data for the other two. You guys will calculate out the other two results. and average the three answers. And then the other part of this is there are questions to answer. So those questions, when we go back to the experiment setup here, at the very end of the write-up, there's questions for analysis. And they've got a couple of parts, A, B, C. And then they give you another experiment here where they give you the experimental data and they want you to calculate out the molar mass of another gas. And then they want you to use some percent composition in order to try to find the empirical formula for that gas and determine its actual formula. We'll see how you guys manage with this part, because I think that you've done some of that already. You haven't done it from gases, but once you have the molar mass, then it's just a matter of using the molar mass and using the data there in order to calculate out what the empirical formula and then the molecular formula is from that. All right, so that's your challenge for next week. So I'll put up the data for the additional two trials. You guys will calculate out two more results. You'll average all three. You'll give me an average answer for the three. And then you have the questions for review to answer at the end of the thing. And that's what's going to be due next week. All right. And I'll put those up on Canvas and I'll give you a little write-up that gives you the results for the other couple of trials. And then you just follow along exactly with what I did today in going through and doing the calculation. And the most important thing is not to forget to compensate for the water, the pressure of the water. That's the biggest thing. And that pressure compensation comes from using the table and just looking up the pressure of the water based on the temperature of the water. And that's how you go through and do it. All right, that's all I got for you today. That's our experiment on PV equals MRT. And I'll get that uploaded up into Canvas. And I'll either see you guys in office hours or I'll see you next week.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right, you're welcome. Take care.